Hello, everyone. I'm Becca, dietitian by trade, mom 24/7, wife from the start, and when there's a few extra hours in the day, you might find me hitting the trails or on horseback.
And I'm Kara, a therapist to women, a mom to a boy, an entrepreneur, mountain junkie, and a postpartum runner.
And this is Fit for a Queen, a podcast that's devoted to the female athlete wanting to balance the teeter-totter of all the things we desire out of life as women. Performance, health, intellect, and taking time for self, even if we only get 1 minute out of the day.
We're so excited to be bringing you the queens in the athletic world who have done just that. Okay, ladies, take a seat at your thrones, grab your crowns, and welcome to Fit for a Queen.
Welcome back, queens. Today we have Sharon Turbin, PhD, clinical sports psychologist and executive coach. She created Amplify Wellness and Performance in 2008 to bring together her clinical psychology specialties of working with high-performance athletes and executives, as well as treating clinical eating disorders. Amplify Wellness and Performance applies a holistic and team approach to client relationships. Sharon has assembled a talented group of clinical psychologists, nutrition experts, and wellness coaches to ensure that her clients have the best results. Sharon has 25 years of clinical psychology expertise, including work at Harvard Medical School, Boston Ballet, Boston Children's Hospital, and private practice. In her work as a trained sports psychologist at Boston Children's Hospital Division of Sports Medicine, Sharon has treated many athletes with post-concussion syndrome, ACL injuries, post-surgical rehabilitation cases, and athletic career transitions. She addresses the psychological needs of the whole athlete, including recruiting issues, concerns around redshirting, self-management within team, coaching relationships, ooh, I bet that was fun, injury recovery, as well as the inevitable transition away from competitive sports or performance.
Sharon also specializes in treating clinical eating disorders, anorexia, bulimia, and binge eating, and in partnership with treatment facilities, builds recovery programs to confront self-sabotaging behaviors that impede healthy relationships and a happy, wholesome life. Many of her patients are elite and high-level athletes and dancers who also seek her out for her eating disorder expertise. Sharon enjoys working with C-level executives on work-life balance, confidence, setback failure recovery, risk-taking, strategic vision, and relationship management in and out of the office. She's motivated by her successes in helping people really change and helps her clients and patients realize that what seemed impossible is absolutely possible. In addition to her day job, Sharon is married to an Olympic athlete and has been an athlete, parent, professional ice skating, hockey, and gymnastics, and is a road warrior and strength trainer herself who has made exercise and a healthy diet central to her lifestyle for more than 30 years. Sharon is a first-generation American, born to Greek and Irish parents, and grew up outside New York City. She earned a master's and PhD from Adelphi University and her BS from Lesley University. Sharon is a frequent speaker at psychology conferences and is quoted in national media outlets. Welcome, Sharon. You sound like a busy gal.
Is this over now?
Yeah. And we're done. No, that is quite a resume.
I'm going to have to remember to shorten that bio.
No. We want to be able to talk about everything you've done. And that kind of led us into why we asked you to come on was I heard you speak at Female Athlete Conference about kind of this sexualization in sport. And my gosh, it's taken off now with this Me Too and the Doritos commercial now where ladies need quieter chips. It's kind of ridiculous. So I'm glad that you had that. Have you heard about that with Doritos?
Now
patent a chip that's supposed to crunch quieter because ladies want quieter snack chips.
Chips for ladies.
So first off, I was hoping you just kind of describe what sexualization in sport means from the female perspective.
Okay. So what I'll do is I'll define sexualization and then we can talk about sexualization within the context of sexual abuse and where all of that can fall on a continuum and whether or not it is the same continuum. Refers to when a person, male or female, is valued for what they look like and for their potential use as a sexual object. So if we see, you know, when I did research for this topic for the Female Athlete Conference, I went onto YouTube and I was scouring, you know, for images. And now when I go back to YouTube, I constantly see volleyball girls as videos that I should watch because YouTube thinks that that's what I'm interested in. And so the proliferation of even how something like YouTube might sort through one search that I made for research purposes, there clearly seems to be a demand to look at athletes, male and female, for their sexual properties. Men can be sexualized too. And that would be, the answer there would be yes as well.
Mm-hmm. Right. Do you feel that this has always existed in sport, or is it just now starting to increase?
You know, I went back to my talk and remembered that I started the presentation with tracking what women look like, what female athletes look like, uniform, and even just winning the right to compete back starting in the 40s. And there are some really good historical anecdotes conveying that, you know, women were criticized for even being athletic. And I'm not sure that sexualization of female athletes or women who were wanting to be athletic early on, those were not sexualized women probably of the era. Maybe the contrary. Certainly over the last 30 years, clothing has changed, focusing in on women and the value that women sort of provide. Sorry, that's my computer. telling me I have messages. There's certainly been an increase in the option of women in sport over the last 30 years.
How do you think that's translated now? So you're talking about volleyball, and I think of my sport was basketball. We had these huge baggy shorts and tops, and now even that, we're seeing all of a sudden the straps are become smaller on the uniform, and that's just basketball. Can you talk a little bit more about that in specific sports?
So what I would also say is we have this, which the American Psychological Association sort of came out with a position paper on, is that within the culture, there's sexualization of athletes. Then we have the developing athlete going through, you know, the normal adolescent phases of trying to figure out who they are. And so then there's a process called internalized sexualization where, for simplicity's sake, let's just talk about girls today. But girls then identifying with sexualization. And so some of the, you know, rolling down of the top of baggy shorts or tying a knot so that there's belly exposure, you know, in a really baggy, you know, jersey. Athletes are sometimes driving the sexualization coming from the outside. And so the problem with that is that there's been identification that I'm valued, or I can raise my status if I look sexier when I'm playing basketball. And we have models like Lindsey Vonn, who poses in very provocative ways, and she gets just one of the highest paid athletes for endorsements. And so I remember an interview with Allie Reisman posing nude after the Rio Olympics, and just a conversation, and I'm not landing one way or the other, where she basically said, isn't this body confidence that I can just pose and celebrate what my body looks like? And I think it's this ongoing conversation as to where do we draw the line of the end of sort of objectification, and where are we celebrating the body? And if you get paid to do that, is that objectification? And shouldn't women make as much money as men do, and men don't have to take off their clothes to basically make these kinds of endorsement dollars? So now it's being driven both ways. Athletes self-identify and do their own self-objectification, and that's probably also driving the change in uniforms.
Mm-hmm. Right. I thought about that with, they had a picture of Tom Brady going in for the Super Bowl, and he had this really nice jacket on, and they were talking about how GQ he looked. And I was like, how often would we see that with female athletes where they're like in professional attire? No, it would be them in their half naked uniform. Right. That's what would end up making it on social media. So such a double standard.
Yeah. Yeah. Like I do. I think I saw one of those images as well. I think he was stepping and he had like, he looked so slick, right? Mm-hmm. So he gets valued for just like his high end, very polished look. And there was side by side on somebody's Instagram of the other quarterback and like how he dresses and say that who they are. And, you know, I guess even though they have clothing on, there's still some objectification of anyone who's in that sort of public light, who they are as a person, as appreciated. And it's more of a projection of what people think these people's lives are about.
Mm-hmm. I'd like for you to chat about that a little bit more. Why do you feel these powerful female athletes are feeling the pressure to fit into these societal ideals?
You know, I think some are and some aren't. I think some are, you know, I think about like the Venus and Serena, where they have battled so much criticism for maybe not being that typical female athlete that is easy on the eye kind of thing, or the model of female that tends to be supported. And yet they went sort of out of their way to brace their strength, their beauty, sort of defying some of what the cultural standards and norms are that would be held for female athletes and tennis players who can also run the risk of being sort of underweight or needing to kind of stick with a rather slim build. There's certainly been controversy within tennis circles about what female tennis players are supposed to look like. And so examples of some women who work really hard to fit in within these societal norms. And since I am not a private consultant to someone like Lindsey Vonn, I can't really say what makes her identify with those ideals, except I think that we're in a culture that if you have a window of time to make a certain amount of money and you're a professional athlete and this is your way of doing that, it seems like a business decision in a lot of circumstances.
Very true.
I'd like to for you to talk a little bit more about what you were saying about sexualization and now us talking more about sexual abuse in athletes. Do you feel that it is kind of on this continuum or related at all?
Well, I think that the mindset of someone who would abuse any woman or goes well beyond sexualization. Yes, it is definitely seeing these young patients of Dr. Nasser's as a potential sex object. And so embedded in that kind of abuse is definitely objectification. But that kind of pathology or sociopathy that led to the actual behavior that was sexual abuse, it just takes it to a completely different place. So it's not just maybe looking at someone or a transaction being somewhat objectifying, or the prettier girl gets pardoned from, certain expectations as an athlete or something like that. And then, you know, sexual trauma and abuse just so much more profound.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, absolutely.
Well, I don't even think about the stereotypes of sexualization that occur in sport, like how certain sports, they believe it tend to be homosexuality that's more in that sport. I mean, it's kind of crazy all the stereotypes that people have to pin on the athletic community.
Yeah, and now I think we're going to be developing a whole new way of thinking about where the trans fits in, and just how one's sort of either gender identification or sexual identity, how should it even be relevant to the way that someone gets evaluated as an athlete? And yet it has to be part of the conversation as there is a new category of athlete that's going to be legitimately integrated into teams. Very complicated.
Well, Sharon, thank you so much for this information. So needed right now. And we like to end every interviewee asking our interviewees how they live out the fit philosophy. So how do you sort of balance all of the things we kind of talked about in the beginning, performance, health, intellect, and time for self? So how do you find all the balance in your own life?
I have this beautiful gym right at home, like right below where I'm working.
Nice.
And staying fit and exercise has never really been one of those things that I have to push myself to do. It's just something I really enjoy. Over the last year, I've enjoyed sharing my Peloton bike with my 78-year-old mother. Schedule who's going to get down here first in the morning. While I did inspire her years ago to get on a spinning bike, she is also an inspiration that she continues to live her life at her highest functioning capacity. And so that's been a fun intergenerational experience at home as well. And I love working with high activity people, which that I'm sure that comes through in my, whether it's, you know, a highly active executive or the athletic population. Just really identify with people who like to do the things that they like to do. And so I've always been sort of a fan of passion.
Oh, I like that. Well, we know you'll be watching the Olympics closely, so I'm sure you probably have a couple athletes in it. So.
Well, we have Olympics. Our winter guys are invited to this weekend, Saturday night. Just head out to Boston.
Oh, fun.
Yeah.
Well, thanks for coming on, Sharon. It was a pleasure, and hope you have a great Snowden day.
All right. Thanks, guys.
Thank you.
Thanks, Queens.
Thank you to our sponsor today, Sentimano Counseling. Sentimano Counseling is the premier perinatal mental health practice in Kansas City, treating mood disorders during pregnancy and postpartum, perinatal loss, infertility, eating, and exercise disorders. Go to sentimano.com for further information about the practice and services. For additional information on today's topic and guests, follow us on Facebook, Twitter, and Instagram at Fit for a Queen.
Hashtag Fit for a Queen.
And don't forget to rate us on iTunes. We can't wait for you to join us next time on Fit for a Queen.
Bye, Queens.